This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora, o te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. I'm a little bit nervous already, I don't know why, but hey, let's roll. This is a show that explores the ideas behind a way of recovery through the Alcoholics Anonymous program. Thank you for tuning in and joining us from around the motu and world this evening. My name is Sue, and I share this position with my co-host, Mike. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Sue, how you doing?
Good.
Good.
Good. Warming up here. Warming up.
Excellent.
And joining us here in the studio tonight, I'd love to extend a big warm welcome to our guest, Helen. Hey, Helen.
Hey.
Thanks for coming in and joining us this evening. And how are you going?
I'm pretty good, thanks. I'm a bit hoarse, actually. Got a bit of the lurgy that's going around, but other than that, I'm feeling pretty good, thank you.
Right, and it's not the hay fever and the pollen.
Probably is a bit of that, yeah. But I'll take it because it's spring, and with the hay fever and the pollen, there's lambs in the fields and daffodils warm weather, and yay, yeah, summer's coming.
Yes, yes. Okay, so should we crack into the show? And we always have a small introduction, so be patient, listeners. Here we go. Alcoholics Anonymous is a service based on alcoholics helping other alcoholics. We do the work through a 12-step program where recovering alcoholics support each other who want to stop drinking and where we learn how to live life. In the meeting rooms of AA, by sharing and listening to the main theme of recovery, by way of the AA program, each one of us has finally recognised that we are no longer able to handle alcohol and that we really need to lift our game and stay away from it completely. We do the mahi together and work through the 12 steps. The most important thing is that we also realise that we don't try to deal with the problem single-handedly. We bring the problems out into the open with other alcoholics. And for me, which is my own personal opinion, is working the AA program as a daily practice and being super present in the day. Living sober 24 hours at a time allows me to be here even in this recording studio with two excellent fellows to talk through what it means to live a life of purpose and how we may handle difficulties or surprises that come our way.
Right on. And so we start each meeting in the AA rooms by reading out the Alcoholics Anonymous preamble, and this outlines the fundamental thrust of how the 12-step program works. Helen, would you like to do the honours this evening?
Sure thing. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Helen. And just a little disclaimer that what you hear tonight, these are the opinions of the three of us in tonight's show, and they're not necessarily the opinions of Alcoholics Anonymous as an organisation. So we have guests that are invited to share their story and experience. So really it's just us, recovering alcoholics, talking about different aspects of our own journey. And so we also have a daily reflection. So we have got a little book which has a reading for every day of the year. Today being Tuesday the 14th of October, a program for living. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest or self-seeking motives. And that's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 86. I lacked serenity, excuse me. With more to do than seemed possible, I fell further behind, no matter how hard I tried. Worries about things not done yesterday and fear of tomorrow's deadlines denied me the calm I needed to be effective each day. Before taking steps 10 and 11, I began to read passages like the one cited above. I tried to focus on God's will, not my problems, and to trust that he would manage my day. It worked, slowly, but it worked. So that's our reading for today.
Yeah, there's a bit to unpack there.
Helen,
what are you? Have you had some thoughts about that one? Or
I really love this step. This we quote's taken from step 11 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it starts off when we on awakening, we think about the day ahead and we ask that God will direct our thinking, and then gives you a sort of some guidance around how that will look. And then this is actually thinking about it, this is the end of step 10, where we retire at night, we constructively review our day. And then I'm getting crossed wires here. So this is the nighttime part of step 10. Mm. So I'm hopefully, as I've gone through the day, I've looked at things as I've gone through the day and worked step 10 as I've needed to. But you know, one of the things that I really like about this program is it's packaged really simply. So it's just a wee discipline that I can do at the end of the day and go, okay, you know, how did I do today? Where could I have been better? And where could I have? But also, it's an opportunity to look at the things that I've done well, because I'm quite a self-deprecation was one of my it was one of my big defects, not being able to, you know, one of the problems with alcoholism is it's a disease of perception. So my perception would either make me feel as though I was better than or worse than. You know, I was an egomaniac with low self-esteem. Mm. So this review at the end of the day gets me back into the right
form
space.
Gets me back in form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can look at it. So, you know, when I get to the end of the day today, it can just be as much as 2 or 3 minutes. I know initially when I first got into this program, I would spend quite a bit of time writing and taking time to think about how I'd done. And to be honest, there seemed to be a lot more in the negative column than in the positive column. But I do feel today, after a bit of time up, that there's often a lot more in the positive column than there is in the negative. Or, you know, getting away from the positive and the negative, maybe there's more that I've done constructively rather than destructively. And I'm really grateful for being able to live better because of this. Yeah,
that's right. It's also, as you said, it's acknowledging the progress you've made in the smallest little measures through to something that might be quite significant.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm trying to improve my own practice. You know, I'm not always thinking, am I doing it okay? You know,
yeah.
am I doing these parts right? But it is, level of sobriety is much smaller than yours, Helen, but not level, sorry, my duration, if you like. I'm not sure what the time length of that. And so I'm still working out how everything can fit in and roll through, you know, and these are quite new experiences. But that idea of the drinking has departed, the act of drinking, and now sort of we talk about step 10 can also look at that sort of emotional sobriety, like how do I manage my emotions today? How did I do? You know, how was I with other people?
Yeah.
You know, Like, am I still not working at my old white patterns, you know? So I'm still sometimes in a – the training wheels are still on, you know, for me in a sense. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I was reading about no relation to AA, but I was reading about Nigel Latta this morning, who just died
sadly
in the last couple of days. And one of the things that he talked about in his book, which has been published, his last book is this the concept of leaving a legacy of love, and ultimately it's the way that you've loved that is the marker of how your day has been, how you've, and you know, for me that's a bit of a theme, I guess, coming here and talking about my recovery and the tracks that I've chosen and things like that. It's how what sort of legacy have I left today? Have I left a legacy of love and care, or have I left the opposite to that, which is not as pleasant, and obviously not as pleasant, but it's just a goal. It's like a challenge each day. And step 10 is the framework that gives me, it gives me the framework to look at things as they come up and either go, good job, or that's that old granddad again, you know. Old granddad of, you know, acting out in your anger. Yeah, and I see them my defects very much like that now. They used to be my enemies and I was scared of my defects, but now I see them generally as my friends because they're my prompt, you know. When I'm feeling disturbed and like they're coming up, it's like, hey, there's work to be done here. Yeah. And
I quite like that. That's cool. I sort of have a bit of an interest in this part, IFS, it's got internal family systems theory, which Richard Schwartz does. And he's got a book called No Bad Parts.
Right.
And he thinks that, you know, he would explain something like our character defects as being these parts, but he thinks they're all, you know, I like the way that you talked about them as being your friends. He sort of thinks that we should, you know, if we notice ourselves playing up in some or other way, that we thank this part for turning up, and we try and look at what it was actually trying to achieve. Because often these things are defense mechanisms or things that have, you know, possibly at one stage in our lives were adaptive traits or whatever. So,
I agree.
Yeah, so that's really cool. I really like the way you frame it. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, for me, defects sort of fall into a couple of broad categories. One of them is that they're things that I've used to keep myself safe, which are no longer useful. Mm. And then the other thing is that they are things that are actually good things. They're assets plus fear. And I've used them to excess in order to protect myself. And often, and those, an example of that would be caretaking and fixing and controlling. You know, I don't want to be controlling other people's lives, but I do care about them. But I needed, because of my background, I needed to control what was going on around me to keep myself safe. But now I've got a higher power to keep me safe. Then I can let go of that need to control, and I can just enjoy being protected and safe. So I can just care and trust the outcome, which is really freeing, actually. Yeah.
And in your, well, we were talking earlier, and over these many years of your sustained sobriety, do you go through this, do you continually cycle through some of the steps, or you just move through 10 and 11, 12?
So my rule... Definitely, yeah. So my rule of thumb is right from the beginning, my sponsor said to me, you do steps 1 to 9 and then you maintain what you've done in step 1 to 9. In step 10, 11 and 12. But there is backwards and forwards, this stuff going backwards, you know, it's a two-way street. So for me, step 10, I've got the model of what I do in step 10 in step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. So it's really clear that I've got a model and I know what to do. So if I suddenly lose my poop with somebody today, mm-hmm. I can go to step 4. I can then do a step 5, and then I can be ready to let it go and then make amends. And that's my step 10. And then step 11 is reinforcing my connection that I made with my higher power when I finally surrendered in step 3, you know, the 1, 2, 3. And that's how I see it. So if my step 11's really good on a day-to-day, moment, hour-by-hour, moment-by-moment basis, then the step 10s usually become a bit, then they don't happen that much because I'm connected and I'm listening and I'm taking it moment by moment and I'm not in the past and I'm not in the future. And then step 12 is the sum total of all of that work and being able to have something to carry to somebody else. But what I really like about the step 10, the way that Bill wrote it is he says that you continue to take personal inventory and when we are wrong, promptly admitted it. So, you know, I take personal inventory. It talks about assets and liabilities. That means I'm looking at good things too, like mm-hmm. we said before.
Yeah, yeah.
And then when we're wrong, I do promptly admit it. It does say in the big book that when we make new mistakes, we deal with them immediately. And I've been thinking a lot about this lately and what is a new mistake for me? And often a new mistake for me will be a defect that will suddenly come up and I'll go, boy, I've never dealt with that before. And it keeps happening, you mm-hmm. know. And one of them, a good example of this would be enabling. I didn't know that I was an enabler, that I allowed people to treat me, I allowed them to treat me badly. And so by recognizing that and by seeing, hey, you know, was it a new mistake or was it something that's always been happening, but I recognized it for the first time. And it says also in the big book, more will be revealed. And Bill and Bob said that, you know, more will be revealed. It's never going to end this spiritual journey. So when that new mistake happens, that for me is a time where sometimes it's a spot check inventory. Sometimes it's a look at the first 9 steps all over again. And it might mean a bit of writing. It might be sharing. You know, so I might have to do a mini step 4 on that particular thing because it's something new and I'm going, hey, I've never seen this before. So
for listeners, in terms of step 4,
yeah,
that's essentially identifying like what was our part in that.
Yeah.
In that sort of situation.
Definitely.
You might be able to explain that quite a lot more.
Searching and fearless moral inventory.
Yeah. So we look at ourselves. And then instead, the following step, we admit to God, our higher power, our spiritual guide, however we want to name our higher power, to ourselves and then to someone else. And then by admitting to someone else, I get my secrets out in the open. And it will be something as simple as following the steps that I did when I did step 4 and 5 initially. So there's columns in the big book, you know.
Sure is.
I do my column and then I do my next column and then I do my next column and I spit it out the other end. And so the other thing I was going to say was the great thing I like about step 12 is it talks about having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. We try to carry this message to other alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And somebody said to me that if you want to start off with principles, think of the opposite of all your defects, and that's a good place to start. So, you know, I don't always have another alcoholic around to talk to share with, to be able to help. but I can practice these principles in all my affairs. Mm. And that means day to day, I can take that opportunity in any interpersonal interaction. 'Cause as well as a disease of perception, it's a disease that really affects relationships. We are not good relators by default, I don't believe. I haven't met one yet that's got it sorted. So being conscious of the need to relate really well and to act better than I feel and to practice the antithesis of my defects in that step 12 on a daily basis is also really, really good. And in between that is step 11, this conscious contact with God, pausing as soon as I feel agitated, bringing my higher power into every situation, knowing that my higher power isn't in yesterday or isn't in tomorrow. The only real experience I have of my higher power is now and over the next, my next action. And action is where people see me performing well. They don't see me performing well in my thoughts because they can't hear my thoughts. So, you know, I have to act myself into a better way of thinking. I can't think myself into a better way of acting. I can sit and think all day about how I'd like to be tolerant, but I need to
be. And it can be really difficult.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you overthink or you think you can outsmart yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it just adds up. But what I've taken from what you just said is this being really present in that moment as well, as you say, not looking forward and backward and in terms of, that's the step 11. I mean, I'm just learning so much here tonight. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
it's just like, I mean, that's why we're like really quiet. We're just looking at you. Just go, keep going. Keep going.
I was thinking on the, when you talked about sort of the opposite of your defect. So for an example, would that be something like, suppose I have a defect, which I do, like being controlling, say.
Yeah.
Would the opposite of that be something like acceptance and surrender or something like that?
You can pick your own. I mean, when I did step four, when I do take people through step four and five, when they write their defects down, you know, the things that they can, their grosser handicaps, they recognise them as a pattern by doing the step four and five. I usually say, add another column, now write the antithesis of those. Mm-hmm. And they're your goals until you get through the rest of the programme. So for me, I've got three umbrella defects, big ones. So one of them is perfectionism. Mm-hmm. One of them is control. And then the third one is fear mm-hmm. of people rejecting me. So the antithesis of those is for the control. It's letting go and letting God, just mm-hmm. letting it all go, mm-hmm. trusting the outcome. For perfectionism, it's knowing that I'm good enough. I have enough, I do enough, and you're good enough, and you have enough, and you're doing it, and we're all good enough. We're all God's kids. We all have a right to be here. I can't play God in your life because I sure didn't do very well playing God in my own life, so I have no right to jump into somebody else's life. And then the third one is fear of rejection. And
is that a deep dive from... like
lots
of like
way back.
If we had a couple of hours, we could really crack into it.
Yeah. But I mean, for me, it's just a proving of myself mm-hmm. and knowing and, you know, again, thinking about the songs that we're going to, you know, we're going to play later. It's the transformation that happened in my life. To allow me to approve of myself through this fellowship. And first of all, it was people like you guys who accepted me just the way I am. And then it was knowing that my higher power accepted me just the way I am. And then the biggest step was learning to accept me just the way I am and to love me and to love my foibles as well as my good things and to think, I'm just this complex... person who is unique and to enjoy it and to know that I was created that way and if I can think like that, then life is very simple.
And on the note of songs that you've chosen,
amazing. What's the song?
Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the first song that you have lined up for us? I think we've got an appropriate segue.
Is that La Madre Marta?
I think we've got Water. Because You Loved Me First. I think that's what we've got lined up.
Okay, so really different songs. First one is Celine Dion. Not a massive Celine Dion fan. But what I really like about this song is that she was talking about, I'm assuming, talking about a lover, somebody that loved her in a worldly sense. But when I hear the words, this encapsulates for me what AA did in my life. God in skin through people, the love and strength that I received through the fellowship. And belonging to the fellowship.
Awesome. Okay, well, without much further ado, Because You Loved Me by Celine Dion.
For all those times you stood by me, for all the truth that you made me see, for all the joy you brought to my life, for all the wrong that you made right, for every dream you made true, for all the love I found in you, I'll be forever thankful, baby. You're the one who held me up, never let me fall. You're the one who saw me through it all. You were my strength when I was weak. You were my because you loved me.
You're listening to AA Live on ORFM. So Helen, I thought we might just spend a little bit of time talking about your personal story and what sort of brought you into the room. So we often talk about sharing our experience, strength and hope in the rooms, and I wondered if you could just give us a bit of your story.
Sure, definitely. Well, I came into the fellowship at the age of 23, so a wee while ago now. I joined in the UK, and when I joined, I had gone through the process of trying many different forms of support and help to stop drinking. I was at the point where I knew that I couldn't stop on my own, and but was still trying to do that, the common thing that we do, which is to keep trying to convince myself that I could drink like other people, that I still had the privilege of doing that. And it took me a year in the fellowship to recognise that all I was going to do if I kept drinking was to improve my story, and the story was getting uglier. Good to not keep improving it. So with the help of a sponsor when I first got in, and the rest of the fellowship around me and my family, who were incredibly supportive, I began the journey of recovery. And so I did what I was told. I bought a big book. Big book is the text of Alcoholics Anonymous, written by Bill W. And I stayed close to the guidance that was in that, worked through the steps, the first 9 steps, made my amends, and began living steps 10, 11 and 12, which you can look up. It's the AA's online and the big books online through AA Netherlands. All of that's in there. The key thing for me was that I needed to grow up. I had not really faced life on life's terms, lived in a bit of a fantasy land. And although I had studied. I'd managed to haul myself through my degree. I was still pretty directionless, and
This is like the late 80s, is it?
Early
90s. Early
80s. Yeah.
Early 80s.
Yeah, and so I did my degree and moved to. I was in London when I was starting to get really bad, and then moved back up to my hometown in England, and that's where I got sober. And the people that were around me, a lot of the people, including my first sponsor, had really done recovery hard. They'd got well in prison, they had earned that recovery and earned their place in the rooms. But what they did was they passed on this program to me in pristine condition. And they basically said, this is what you do. You either do what's suggested or you don't stop. And gradually I developed a relationship with a power greater than myself through that time. It wasn't difficult because I'd been searching for a long time. And when I was a child, I used to take myself off to church. I was confirmed in the Church of England. There was something there. As well as the putting alcohol into that hole, there was a desire to fill that whatever space there was deep in my the hole in my soul with something more wholesome. And I definitely grew over time, and my life has changed so much through being able to stay sober. I didn't really what I call fill my skin or fill my potential, achieve my potential when I studied first time. But by staying sober and working the steps on a daily basis, I got to retrain in a profession that I really love.
I've always been curious, actually, were you drawn to medicine through your recovery? Is there a linkage there?
Always wanted to be a doctor right from when I was about 5 and I got my first plastic stethoscope. But circumstances were such that it wasn't going to work first time around, just with other things that were happening in my life, aside from my own problems. So it was always there in the background. And so when I did actually manage to get into that professional training program, I had married and had 4 children. That was a challenge as well, to go through that course, which is relatively demanding with children as well. But, you know, the program kept me grounded and the kids did too. And I'm really grateful for my family's support through that retraining time, and also really grateful for sobriety so that I could be present in their lives. I'm not saying that I did that perfectly, and I've lots of things that I had to grow in as a parent. But I think, you know, they say that your recovery is the hardest place to do recovery is in your home, and I would agree with that. Yeah, but also the greatest joy comes from working through that recovery, and then also in your profession too. So I'm very, very grateful for the opportunities that this program has given me to live life to the full, which I would never have done had I stayed doing what I was doing.
So you mentioned spending about a year in the rooms before you. Were you sort of in and out there a little bit for that year, or did you sort of white knuckle through that year, or did you?
I came in, looked around, and thought, "Oh my goodness, what a bunch of losers!" Actually, and my attitude was not good at all. And I still thought I could do it on my own. You know, I'm a fighter. I'm gonna do this myself. So I went out and had another good go at making it all work for myself, and you know, it didn't. And I came back to the rooms, and then it took about another 3 months before I finally got to the point where, and I didn't know that it was going to happen, where I gave in completely. And the second song that I chose is all about the change from the chaos and the misery of what was going on in my life, and then how light came into my life. And I'm very grateful that I had a spiritual experience that was sudden and profound. And I got on my knees to do step 3 at 3 in the morning, and I woke up a different person, and I've never wanted to drink again. The spiritual awakening, the spiritual experience has been, you know, a slow burn. Mm-hmm. But that first real awareness that there was something different, there was something else, that that I didn't need to be in this hell anymore, that I could live in a the fourth dimension, which it talks about in the big book, which is over it. It's a new way of living. It's a freedom. It's a way of being able to function at a very different level. To the where I was functioning was the gift that I got through that surrender. So, you know, my daily practice today, part of the first thing I say in the morning is I surrender. And then I thank my higher power that I'm alive and that I have a day, and ask that my day will be sober. And that keeps it very simple.
That's really cool. Do you have a, I guess being in the medicine world, you know, you probably have experience with a sort of medical model of alcoholism and things like that as well.
Yeah.
Do you, how do you find that marries with the spiritual program? Do you think they can work well together, or do you sort of sense any tension between them? Or?
Yeah, there's tension. Yeah, there's definite tension. And it's really understandable why, if you're not, you don't have a spiritual basis in your life, or overtly have a spiritual belief, that the science of addiction and the spiritual belief is really hard to marry together. And there are lots of other options, and I totally respect those for people who are struggling with drinking, problem drinking, dependence, addiction. You know, it's a, whether you want to call it a spectrum or whatever. But the reality is that there are people that are alcoholics of the type that can only be, can only recover if they have some kind of spiritual change in the way that paradigm shift, both in their thinking and their acting. And this is what we're about in AA. And so, yes, there is a tension between the two. But if it's life or death, then that tension should be irrelevant. We need to be able to we need to be able to see it for what it is, even though maybe people don't understand it and they don't get it because they've never been that desperate themselves. There is a a mind, body, spirit connection that needs to happen for things to change. I mean, we talk about alcoholism being an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. And that basically means I want to drink, and as soon as I drink, I can't stop. And no human power for the people that the big book talks about can actually change that. So we need a spiritual solution.
It's almost my autobiography, that line. Whenever I hear that, you know, in the in the rooms, I'm like, I want to put my hand up. That's me.
That's me. C'est moi.
Who wrote that? That's me. That's me. But yeah, because I come from a the higher power, that was definitely a barrier for me. Accepting, you know, coming into the rooms, but I knew it was a condition, and I was obsessed, you know, the alcohol, and I tried to solve it, you know, technically looking at medical, what was happening to me. So, you know, I knew technically what I was doing to myself.
Yeah.
And then here's me, like, you know, Mrs. Atheist, agnostic, rocking up, and I'm like, how am I going to deal with this? But I just thought, I just have to try and find a way. I have to work this out. Because look what I've done to myself. It's not working. And you know, like, and then as I've learnt more, and obviously the connectivity in the rooms and really listening to what people are saying, you know, it's incredible. So whoever's listening out there, you know, you can find another way to come in if you're not religious as well. But it's just remarkable listening to what you're saying, Helen, because it's to have that real radical shift. I mean, that's what a lot of people want. They just want that.
Yeah.
You know, it hasn't happened to me yet. What's wrong? You know, I'm not feeling that sort of thing yet.
Sort of white light moment.
And that's okay. You know, but it's that patience. Just keep moving.
And a God of your understanding, I guess, you know, it's very, the great thing about the program is it's so broad and personal to each individual. So it can be, you know, and for me, I started with, because I came in an atheist, and I actually sort of can quite resonate with your having a sort of significant experience. I'm not quite sure where I sit with it all right now, but I'm not that bothered about it. I'm staying sober, so that's really cool. But I came in and just used the group to start with, because that was something I could see, the group of drunks, and because I could see you all in the room, and, you know, that felt like that was helping me stay sober, and I couldn't do it on my own. And then from there, I've sort of, you know, it's broadened out into something a lot more than that. But it can be the group, it can be the program, it can be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. And it can morph as well. You know, yep. It doesn't have to be the
same.
Yeah,
that's what I've experienced.
Yeah.
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 It's not that you, you know, don't change it day by day kind of thing. But no. It's just like, you know, but yeah, as you're sort of growing into the program and understanding that bandwidth of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that line in that it says the primary purpose of this book is to find a power greater than yourself, not that can solve your problem. And you know, it's greater than me, and it's greater than, and it's my belief. It doesn't have to be somebody else's belief, and that's special.
Mm.
And I think the people that not invented AA, but the two people that got together and wrote all this, it's, you know. It was so wise to allow people to form their own spiritual connection that would put them in a position where they didn't want to drink again.
Yeah, is this an inclusive program?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. And was it Bill that had he sort of had a close relationship with a Catholic priest, his father Ed? Was it Bill? Okay. Or was it Bob?
I think it was Bill.
Bill.
But let's say it was one of them.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And so in my understanding
I'd have to quickly flick through my history. Yeah.
My understanding is he was considering sort of converting to Catholicism but then decided that for the good of the program he would remain sort of non-denominational.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want to sort of influence anybody else's decisions in the group, right. And stuff, which I thought was quite cool.
That is really good. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, amazing.
So you've got another song for us. So this is one by Maria Callas. Callas?
Yeah.
How do you pronounce that?
I think whatever way you want to. It's, Kala or Callas. But I chose this because it was, I heard it first in the movie Philadelphia, where Tom Hanks was acting and was dying of AIDS, and it was during a party that he had at the end, coming towards the end of his life, and it was in the background, and his lawyer was present. And I think that the thrust of why I chose this is that she's in despair, she's in misery, her mum's died, her family home's burnt down, it's in the middle of the French Revolution, but then she experiences she has a spiritual experience, and what she experiences is an overwhelming feeling of love. And, you know, for me, God is love and love is God. And I just felt it mirrored the spiritual awakening that I had at the beginning of this journey. But also it's just a beautiful, she sings so beautifully.
Fantastic.
Wonderful. Okay, let's have a wee listen.
Thank you.
welcome back to AA Live. And I'd like to thank Helen very much for coming in today. I feel like we could have done about three episodes, you know, with you today.
Yeah, we could have had part A, part B.
Oh.
Part C could have we got to the garden. We didn't get to the garden.
Oh, no. Next time.
Next time. Next time. Next time would be amazing. But it really, yeah, it's been very thorough.
I think it's a sign of a good show when you start running out of time.
I think so too. Yeah. I've been quite mesmerised. It's been really good.
And so, which does mean, unfortunately, Sue, that we can't play your song this week. We have to play it next week.
Damn.
So that it gives everyone a good reason to come back next week. We'll keep the suspense going. So thank you so much, Helen. We really appreciate you coming in and sharing your, you know, what amazing knowledge you have. It's been, I felt like I've, yeah, my program has deepened this evening, which is great.
Amen. Same.
So just to close things out, to remind everyone, Alcoholics Anonymous is based on a 12-step program. For those that aren't sure what that means, the 12 steps outline a path to spiritual progress through a series of actions designed to draw out a complete mental, emotional and spiritual shift in perception. We believe the 12 steps can be a critical element of a long-term recovery program. So thanks everyone for listening tonight. And just one last thing for all of our listeners, that if you want to drink, that's your business. And if you want to stop, we can help. And there are two ways to contact Alcoholics Anonymous. You can call us on 0800 229 6757, or you can also visit the New Zealand AA website, which is aa.org.nz. It's really worth exploring. It's got a big list of all the meetings, times and locations all over the country. And if you have any queries or questions about the show, then you can email us directly.
And it's a new thing.
At aalive@aaotago.org.nz. How about that? That's news to me. I probably actually received that memo, but...
Continue, Mike.
Yeah. Okay, wonderful. Well,
and just, what was the other one? There's a couple more ones there. That's right. This will be replayed on Sunday night at 8:30, so you can check that out if you've missed parts of it. And you can also go onto ORFM's website and you can download it. So good. And it's there for 1,000 days. Who knew? This is where we're all learning bits and bobs about this. So,
You can check out some past shows there while you're there if you really wish. Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, well, that's all we have time for tonight. Take care of yourselves out there, and until next time, mā te wā.
Good night. Mā te
wā. Yay.
Ka mārie.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.